Welcome to the Latin American and Iberian Song Podcast. Today's episode immerses us in the captivating world of Afro-Latin art song.
A fascinating corner of the musical world.
It sure is. We're exploring the work of Dr. Patricia Caicedo.
A true champion of this often overlooked genre. Her research is essential reading, really.
Absolutely. We're focusing on her article, what's it called again?
Memory, Nostalgia, and Resistance in the Art Songs of Afro-Latin Composers. Published in Diagonal.
That's the one. Okay, so before we get into the nitty-gritty, can you give us a little background? What exactly is Afro-Latin art song? Paint us a picture.
Imagine this. Elegant salons in 19th century Rio, filled with the sounds of European classical music. But you also hear hints of rhythms and melodies that traveled across the Atlantic with enslaved Africans.
Ah, okay, I'm starting to see it.
That fusion, that tension between imposed culture and resilient traditions is where the genre takes root.
Wow, so we're talking about music as a form of resistance.
Absolutely. It's fascinating how, even when stripped of possessions and discouraged from practicing their customs, Afro-Latin communities wove their heritage into their music. It became a way to hold on to identity, to remember, and to resist cultural erasure.
That's powerful. Mm-hmm. So where do we see this play out in the music itself? Dr. Caicedo's article mentioned some really specific examples.
She does. One that really struck me was the lindu. It started as a dance brought by enslaved people from Angola. It was considered almost scandalous at first.
Scandalous? How so?
Well, it was this very rhythmic, very lively dance, and it challenged the European norms of what was considered proper.
I see. So it was seen as a threat.
Exactly. But here's the thing. The lindu, it didn't just fade away. It evolved into a song form that eventually found its way into those very salons we were just talking about.
Wait, so a dance deemed too scandalous by the elite ended up influencing their music. That's amazing. There's a story there.
Exactly. And it shows how cultural exchange isn't always top down. It speaks to the resilience and pervasiveness of these musical traditions. The lundu, along with forms like the maxis and samba, caught the attention of classical composers in the early 20th century.
Like who? Give us some names.
Think Villa-Lobos, Camargo Guarnieri. They were inspired by this idea of incorporating folk elements into their art music, but also by the music they were hearing in their own backyards. Dr. Caicedo points out the use of syncopation, those offbeat rhythms and the way melodies were ornamented. These are hallmarks of African musical influence.
So they were, in a way, reclaiming those elements and weaving them into what was considered high art.
Precisely. And it wasn't just about the music itself, but about the language and stories embedded within. Dr. Caicedo highlights the use of Yoruba, a language brought over from West Africa, still spoken in religious ceremonies today.
She mentions this thing called candomblé. Mm. What is that exactly?
It's a religion that blends African traditions, particularly Yoruba, with Catholicism. And it's in these ceremonies, with their chants and rhythms, that we see how music preserved not just the memory of Africa, but actual African languages in the heart of Latin America.
It gives me chills. It makes you think about how every note, every rhythm, has this hidden history. It really makes you think twice about just hitting play without considering the journey. You know.
It really does. And Dr. Caicedo doesn't just focus on Brazil in her research. She also takes us to Cuba, where a similar story was unfolding.
Oh, interesting. What was happening in Cuba?
Well, around the same time, the Afro-Cuban movement was gaining traction, championing Black artists and poets. It was like a parallel awakening.
So were they also experiencing this fusion of cultures, this resistance through music?
Absolutely. Composers like Amadeo Roldan, a prominent figure in Cuban classical music, were setting the poems of Nicolás Guillén, a leading voice in the Afro-Cuban movement, to music, blending those classical structures with the undeniable rhythms of Afro-Cuban music.
Okay, so we've got Brazil, Cuba. Are we seeing a pattern here? Like, across Latin America, these echoes of Africa reverberate through the music, but often in a way that's been overlooked or even intentionally silenced.
You've hit a crucial point there. That brings us to what Dr. Caicedo calls cultural whitening, this process of appropriating while erasing.
Cultural whitening.
It's this idea that even when those African elements were incorporated into mainstream music, it often happened in a way that stripped them of their original context and meaning.
So it's like a double marginalization. First being excluded and then being absorbed, but only after being sanitized.
Yeah.
Right?
That's rough. It is. It really makes you question the rigid categories we place on music, you know, folk, popular, classical.
Well, broad strokes.
Dr. Caicedo argues that these categories, they were essentially imposed by Europe, a way to assert their cultural dominance and control the narrative, you know, European music at the top.
and Afro-Latin music just refuse to be contained.
Exactly. It's like those elegant salons in Rio, they may have been designed for European music, but those African rhythms, that energy, it found a way in. It's a testament to the resilience of those traditions.
It's like trying to suppress a force of nature. You can try to control it, but those influences will always find a way to express themselves.
Exactly. And it reminds me of something else Dr. Paisedo talks about. Argentina, a place where historically there were very deliberate efforts to downplay African influence, to create this narrative of a purely European heritage.
Really? I didn't know that about Argentina.
Yeah, it's a fascinating case. But here's the thing. Even there, you can hear it.
You hear what?
The echoes of Africa in the tango.
Wait, really? I always thought of tango as this, like, sultry, passionate dance, but you're saying its origins are connected to Africa.
Deeply intertwined with Afro-Argentine communities. And it makes sense when you think about it. That intensity, the way it makes you want to move, those complex rhythms, it's all there in the DNA of the music.
Wow, that's incredible. I had no idea. But what happened? How did it become so Europeanized?
Well, like we were talking about earlier, as tango gained popularity in Europe, it went through this process of being sanitized, packaged for a global audience that wasn't ready to acknowledge those African roots.
So another example of what Dr. Caicedo calls discursive genocide, this idea of systematically erasing a culture's contributions from the historical record. It's like it's happening on two levels. First, the exclusion, and then this subtle, insidious erasure through appropriation.
Exactly. And that's why Dr. Caicedo's work is so important. She's not just uncovering a musical history. She's reclaiming a narrative, bringing those silenced voices back into the conversation. And it makes you wonder, what other stories are hidden in the music we love? What other layers of meaning are we missing when we listen only to the surface?
It's a powerful reminder to dig deeper, to question those easy categories, and really listen for the echoes of history in every note.
You are right.
Listeners, we hope this episode of the Latin American and Iberian Song Podcast has inspired you to explore this beautiful and rich repertoire. And just a quick reminder, this podcast is brought to you by the Barcelona Festival of Song, which will celebrate its 21st anniversary in 2025. It's such a special program focused on the study of Latin American and Iberian art song. If you're a classical singer, collaborative pianist, voice teacher, or musicologist, this is the perfect place to immerse yourself in music in Spanish, Catalan, and Portuguese.
Absolutely. The festival is directed by Dr. Patricia Caicedo, one of the leading experts in the field, and it offers a truly unique experience. If you want to learn more or register, head over to BarcelonaFestivalOfSong.com. The next registration deadline is January 8th, so don't miss your chance. It fills up quickly since they only accept 15 singers each year, and it's open to all ages. Whether you're a student or a teacher, there's always something to learn.
Exactly, and let's not forget, this podcast is also supported by Mundo Arts Publications. They publish the amazing Latin American and Spanish vocal music collection, which includes IPA transcriptions, English translations, and introductory studies to help you perform this music with accuracy. It's a fantastic resource for anyone looking to expand their repertoire.
And we also want to thank the Center for Iberian and Latin American Music at the University of California, Riverside, for their ongoing support. Thanks so much for listening. And we hope you'll join us again soon to continue exploring the world of Latin American and Iberian art song.
We'll be sure to link to Dr. Caicedo's article in the show notes so you can explore this fascinating world of Afro-Latin art song for yourselves. Until next time.